McNeil. U.S. immigration authorities say an 8-year-old boy from Guatemala died in government custody early Tuesday, marking the second death of an immigrant child in detention this month. AP correspondent Shelley Adler reports.
A Guatemalan official says he was told by the father of an 8-year-old boy who died in U.S. custody that the two had been traveling from their home in the Central American country to Tennessee, adding that his son had been in, quote, perfect health. U.S. Customs and Border Protection say the boy died shortly after midnight on Christmas. That's after he was taken to a hospital in New Mexico, where he was diagnosed with a cold and a fever. He was released Monday afternoon after being held 90 minutes for observation. The agency said the 8-year-old was taken back to the hospital Monday night with nausea and vomiting and died there just hours later. A 7-year-old Guatemalan girl died earlier this month after being apprehended by border agents. I'm Shelley Adler.
The partial shutdown of the U.S. government has moved no closer to a resolution, with President Trump asserting Tuesday the shutdown will continue until his demand for funds to construct a U.S.-Mexico border wall are met. AP Sagar Magani.
Even as he looked to spread cheer via video conference to U.S. troops around the world,
on behalf of the country, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
The president went back to the border wall while telling troops the nation's doing well.
We have a little bit of a shutdown because we believe in walls and we believe in borders and we believe in barriers.
And later told reporters in the Oval Office,
I can't tell you when the government's going to be open.
Adding he's open to meeting again with top Democrats and hopes they can make some progress in getting what he argues is money for the only thing that will stop drugs and human trafficking at the border. Sagar Magani at the White House.
And then the shutdown began late Friday night into Saturday morning. Find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Indonesian rescuers on Tuesday used drones and sniffer dogs to search for survivors along the devastated west coast of Java, hit by a tsunami that killed at least 429 people. Laura Engelfontein is a spokesperson with the International Foundation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Society. She says everything possible is being done to help those in need.
The Red Cross has provided water trucks, ambulances, and medical crews to transfer injured people to hospitals. They've also put together a team of orthopedic specialist doctors and 5 mobile medical teams, because there's a lot of injured. They're seeing a lot of broken bones and severely injured survivors.
At least 154 people remain missing. More than 1,400 were injured, and thousands of residents had to move to higher ground, with the high tide warning extended to Wednesday. An American Nissan executive, Greg Kelly, has been released on bail in Japan. AP correspondent Mike Hempen.
Greg Kelly has been released from detention after being granted bail over the alleged underreporting of the pay of his boss, Carlos Ghosn. Kelly was freed on $635,000 bail after being detained for more than a month. Kelly and Ghosn were arrested November 19th and charged with underreporting Ghosn's pay by $44 million from 2011 to 2015. Ghosn will be detained at least until January 1st, since he also faces breach of trust allegations. I'm Mike Hempen.
Pope Francis urging people around the world this Christmas to see their differences as richness, not a danger. AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
In his Christmas message to the world, Francis says the universal meaning of Christmas is that God is a good father and we're all brothers and sisters. He wished for a spirit of fraternity that would bring together individuals of every nation and culture and people with different ideas, yet capable of respecting and listening to one another, hoping that would bridge the world's great conflicts, citing wars in Syria and Yemen, the conflict in Ukraine, tensions in the Middle East and the Korean Peninsula, as well as social strife in Venezuela and Nicaragua. Without fraternity, he says, even our best plans and projects risk being soulless and empty. I'm Ben Thomas.
At least 3 people were killed and 12 wounded Tuesday by a car bomb in the northern Iraqi city of Tal Afar, a former Islamic State stronghold, according to the military. Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack hours later. Tal Afar, about 80 kilometers west of Mosul, came under the militants' control when Islamic State overran swaths of Iraq's north in 2014. It fell to Iraqi security forces backed by the U.S.-led coalition in August of 2017. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December the 26th. It's Boxing Day around the world, a day to spend with family and friends and to eat up all the leftovers of Christmas Day. You know, the origins of the day are steeped in history and tradition, and the name Boxing Day is a reference to charity boxes or charity drives, where a box was used to collect money for the poor and are traditionally placed in churches on Christmas Day and opened the next day, which is Boxing Day. And that's a bit of historical trivia there to start off our morning here at Daybreak Africa. And we thank you for joining us. And here's some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. There is no holiday cheer for striking doctors in Zimbabwe this Christmas season. The country's health minister says that none of the doctors who have been on strike since the first of this month will receive their December salaries.
The government maintains the policy of no work, no pay. And those doctors and other health workers who did not participate in the unlawful collective job action have already received their December salaries.
That is Zimbabwe's health minister, Obadiah Moyo. And in Sudan, anti-government protesters faced a violent crackdown Tuesday in the capital of Khartoum, marking the seventh day of demonstrations. Sudanese in the diaspora are organizing demonstrations in global capitals, including here in Washington, D.C., to show solidarity with the protesters in Sudan.
And to get the international community engaged and informed about what's going on in Sudan.
That's Ibrahim Babika. He's a Sudanese activist with the pro-democracy group Girifina. I'll be speaking with him later on in the show. And in Cameroon, hundreds of people fled villages in the French-speaking region of Cameroon, fearing attacks from suspected armed separatists from the English-speaking Northwest region. Stay tuned. Those stories and more are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Reuters reports that at least three Sudanese protesters were wounded by gunshots on Tuesday when security forces dispersed rallies in the capital. Demonstrators are calling on President Omar El-Bashir to end his three-decade rule. Doctors continue with their strike, adding more pressure to a government beset by hard economic times. A committee of doctors submitted a formal demand to the president to hand over power to a transitional government of technocrats with a mandate agreed upon by all segments of Sudanese society. The doctor's strike follows a series of protests that the opposition says have killed 22 people since last Wednesday. Bashir, who has been in power since 1989, has shown little tolerance for dissent. He blamed the country's struggling economy on international sanctions and enemies of Sudan. He told a crowd of supporters that their zeal in showing up to hear him was a response to all the traitors, agents, and rabble-rousers that have been demonstrating against him. Amateur video on social media showed a large crowd of demonstrators in the capital, Khartoum, protesting deteriorating economic conditions and calling for the president to step down. Edward Yeranian files this report.
A large crowd of protesters chanted slogans against Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir Tuesday in the capital, Khartoum, not far from the presidential palace. A group of political parties and labor unions had urged their supporters to turn out and called on Bashir to step down. At the same time, President Bashir addressed a crowd of supporters in the town of Wad al-Madani in Jazeera State, telling them that deteriorating economic conditions were the product of an economic blockade by the outside world. The U.S. lifted economic sanctions against Sudan in October, but the Sudanese currency has lost much of its value. Bashir also blasted his opponents, saying they're being manipulated by outside parties. He says that his supporters will only submit to the dictates of God, and he thanks the crowd for its zeal in turning out to welcome and support him against what he called traitors, agents, vandals, and mercenaries of outside parties. Arab media reported that Sudanese security forces loyal to Bashir had been redeployed from border areas and other trouble spots in the country to quell protests in Khartoum. Labor Minister Bahar Idris told Arab media that reports the army was battling protesters were not true. He says that the army is loyal to the government and it is protecting key installations and government buildings, but he does not think that the army has turned against the people. He also says that protests have died down across most of the country within the past 48 hours. Opponents of the government posted amateur video of protesters chanting against the government at a football match against the Tunisian team several nights ago in the city of Omdurman near the capital. Malik, a student from the Nuba Mountain region, tells VOA that he is disappointed by what he called the lack of interest of the outside world in the protest by the Sudanese people. Too many Western and Arab countries, he says, are supporting President Bashir. The emir of the Gulf state of Qatar expressed support for the Sudanese leader, while a number of Gulf TV channels praised what they said were Bashir's recent plans to improve the economy. President Bashir, who is wanted on an arrest warrant issued by the International Criminal Court for human rights violations in the country's Darfur state, has ruled Sudan since the 1989 coup. Lawmakers recently amended the constitution to allow him to run for another term in 2020. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Meanwhile, the Sudanese diaspora in the United States held a protest in the U.S. Capitol, Washington, D.C., to express their support for the demonstrators in their home country. Activists are also planning to hold demonstrations in several cities in Canada, the U.S., Australia, and the U.K. Ibrahim Babikar is a Sudanese activist with the Sudanese pro-democracy movement, Girfina. He was one of the organizers of the protest outside of the Sudan embassy here in Washington, D.C. I reached him by phone to find out what their next step is.
Came down, to Washington, D.C. to demonstrate in solidarity with the protests happening in Sudan right now. So we had our protest, yesterday, and hundreds, came for that call.
And okay. Protested. Yep. And what do you hope to achieve with these protests?
To show, our solidarity and to organize among ourselves, in the diaspora, links, in Sudan, to keep this momentum going and to get the international community engaged, and informed about what's going on in Sudan.
Okay, so the protests in Sudan is entering its seventh day, if I'm not mistaken, started last Wednesday. We've had reports from organizations like Amnesty International, a couple of people dead, police has been deployed on the streets. What are you hearing from your fellow activists on the ground in Sudan right now?
There's a huge, escalation in the violence against peaceful protesters right now in Sudan. As we speak, we are compiling the numbers of dead and wounded and detained. The number, far exceeds the two casualties, that's been reported. Right now we're talking about the numbers, in the 30s or up in the 40s. We're not sure right now, but we'll definitely, update the media with the correct number of casualties. But there are a number of also detained, fellow detained people. The momentum's still going, and hopefully, we'll keep this going forward.
Now, there have been demands made by civil society organizations, including this organization of doctors, who asked the president to step down and to appoint a transitional government of technocrats. Do you see President Bashir acquiescing to that?
It's really hard to tell. How effective it is. It's definitely a great step that we have the labor unions and the doctors and the technocrats joining this movement. It's a step forward, and if it's not been answered, there will be more and more until this regime responds to the demands of the people.
What are you hearing in terms of the response of the security apparatus, the police, the military, in terms of responding to these the protesters?
It's unfortunate. However, this is something that we've seen before. We hope that there will is going to be deterred and they will stop this atrocities and killing their own people. We've seen this in the past, but right now it's kind of in a level that surpassed what happened in 2013 right now.
This is not the first time protests have broken out calling for President Bashir to step down. What do you think is different this time around with this protest as we enter 2019?
What I see being different, that the government doesn't have any plan to mitigate the situation right now. The economy is down to its knees, and the government is in their last straws, or last defense to stay in power, regardless of the austerity measures, regardless of the deteriorating economy. So I don't see an end in sight to the suffering of the people. So this could be ongoing protest.
Now your first protest here in the diaspora in the U.S. was on Saturday. What do you plan to do going forward? Are you planning any more protests? Are there any other protests that are planned in other parts of major U.S. cities or other U.S. Western capitals?
Right, that's a great question. We are actually planning more protests in solidarity, and we also looking to engage our Congress and Senate, in what's going on with Sudan and address the international community that we have here in the USA. So we'll try to do the best we can to support the protests in Sudan.
Ibrahim, thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, take care. That is Ibrahim Babika, a Sudanese activist with the pro-democracy movement group Girifina. Hundreds of people have fled villages in the French-speaking region of Cameroon after suspected armed separatists from the English-speaking northwest region crossed over to the town of Bagouren and torched at least 80 houses, kidnapping 15 people. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Bangouré.
The French-speaking villages of Menkefu and Choupat in western Cameroon are almost empty. An attack by suspected Anglophone separatists early Monday sent hundreds of villagers fleeing for safety. 50-year-old Constantine Jowir, a Menkefu militia member, says he was lucky to get away with only a machete wound to his leg. He says he watched helplessly as one of his militia members died after he was inflicted wounds on his chest and stomach with knives and machetes. He says besides burning houses, the fighters were shooting indiscriminately and taking along people who resisted. Joey says the armed men shouted demands that the government release all arrested English-speaking Cameroonians or pay the price. Elvis Swinjo, A government teacher in the village of Chupat says the men threatened to return if Anglophone leaders were not freed.
There were young boys carrying guns, shooting. One man was killed. As you can see, many of the people around have gone away because they have promised us that they are going to come back, so we don't know their next plan. If the government is not there to help us, there will be a serious catastrophe.
Governor of the Western Region, Augustine Awafonka, says there were more than 300 armed men involved in the attack. He says they abducted 15 people and torched houses, cars and motorcycles and looted property.
More than 86 houses have been destroyed by unidentified gunmen made up of mostly young men and women who appeared in this village and destroyed houses and properties, had the population beaten and left them in pain, poverty, and traumatized. I want to assure them that government is going to redress the situation. More military men will be deployed to take care of the population.
The government blamed Anglophone separatists in the neighboring northwest region for the attack and said they appeared to be men fleeing from military raids. Cameroon separatists did not issue any immediate response to the accusation. It is the second time the Bangoran region, where the villages are located, was attacked. The government deployed the military and axed communities near separatist areas to create village militias for self-defense. Cameroon's English-speaking separatists have been protesting since 2016 against discrimination by the French-speaking majority. Their protests were initially peaceful, but in response to a government crackdown, some separatists are waging a violent campaign for independence. The insurgency gained pace in 2017 when leader Julius Ayuk Tabe was arrested in Nigeria with 46 collaborators and extradited to Cameroon. They face a possible death penalty in Cameroon on charges of secession, terrorism, and attempting to destabilize the country. Cameroon President Paul Biya earlier this month ordered the release of 289 English-speaking people arrested for supporting the separatists. While the gesture of reconciliation received widespread praise, the separatists continued to demand Biya release all of their leaders. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Bangoran, Western Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. We go to Zimbabwe, where the Minister of Health is playing the Christmas Scrooge to striking state doctors. He's announcing a day before the holiday that none of them will receive their salaries. As Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA from Harare, doctors say that their strong arming will not make them call off their almost 1 month long strike.
Zimbabwe's health minister Obadiah Moyo announced the government was suspending all striking doctors and that they will not be paid. The doctors have been on strike since December 1st, demanding that the government better equip hospitals and pay them in US dollars. The doctors say Zimbabwe's hospitals lack modern technology, medicines and protective clothing. They say that being paid in the devaluing local currency called bond notes means a struggle to survive.
Government does not pay salaries in foreign currency, and it is common cause that we do not print United States dollars or any other currency, foreign currency notes. Payment of December salaries. The government maintains the policy of no work, no pay. And those doctors and other health workers who did not participate in the unlawful collective job action have already received their December salaries.
Moyo said the strike by the doctors was causing unnecessary deaths and pain of patients. He did not elaborate with any statistics to back up his claim. But the shortage of state doctors and healthcare workers has been noticeable in hospitals since the strike began. Mutabi Sibebe is the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Doctors Association. He said the government's suspension of the doctors and refusing to pay salaries was not productive.
The Honorable Minister of Health does not fully address the grievances raised by doctors. He had already suspended about 553 doctors nationwide. And how do you expect the health system of this nation to continue in such a scenario? As such, the industrial action is still ongoing.
Union leaders say the government's rejection of their demands has resulted in low morale among health workers. Zimbabwe's health sector has deteriorated in recent years amid poor funding and a struggling economy. It largely depends on the assistance of international organizations such as USAID and the European Union. The striking doctors say they are seeking a court order to declare the government's failure to pay them illegal. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And as the world celebrated Christmas season, religious leaders in Uganda centered their message on national healing, unity, peace, and tranquility. The religious leaders want the government to fight corruption and to stop abuse of human rights in the country. From Kampala, Uganda, Mugume Davis Ruakarinji files this report.
Archbishop Stanley Ntagali, the head of Anglican Church in Uganda, condemned land grabbing perpetrated by those in power and the rich.
Some hundreds or thousands of Ugandans have no homes to go to. They have been evicted from their ancestral homes. In other words, they are refugees in their own country.
Ntagali also said the church will concentrate on protection and advocacy for the rights of children. He said children are among the most vulnerable members of the society. They need to be protected.
So we have decided to focus on the children, to advocate for their rights, and love them and care for them because God loves them. So we should love them because they are a blessing to us. So 2019 will be the year for the children, and I call upon all of you to join so that we can give special attention and advocacy to our children who are suffering. They are the leaders of tomorrow.
Ntagali also castigated gender-based violence in the country. The Catholic Archbishop of Kampala, Cyprian Rwanga, condemned violations of human rights by security personnel.
Throughout this year, we've witnessed untold suffering and brutality meted out to hundreds of people by our security organs during political rallies as well as during demonstrations and also during free associations.
This year, politicians including parliamentarian Robert Chagrani, popularly known as Bobby Wine, were arrested and detained after campaigning for an opposition politician. The politicians claimed they were brutally tortured during arrest and in detention, claims security officials have vehemently rejected. On his part, the Ankole Bishop, Sheldon Mwesigwa, said Ugandans should be peace-loving people. He also asked Ugandans to love and treat fairly hundreds of refugees currently living in Uganda.
One of the parishes we have is a refugee center, Nachivale. And I go there sometimes. I have time. I sleep there even. I interact. The only thing they can do is singing. They have about 20 choirs. They sing until you get tired and you go and sleep. And you look at these people with their suffering and their pain. Very sad moment indeed. How I pray that we shall continue to have peace and tranquility, that at no time shall we find ourselves exiles in another country.
More than 1 million refugees, mainly from neighboring South Sudan, DR Congo, Burundi and Rwanda, live in Uganda after fleeing conflict from their countries. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And that's it for this Wednesday, December the 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa group, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, general elections are coming up in the Democratic Republic of Congo on December 23rd to determine a successor to President Joseph Kabila. an in-depth discussion on what's at stake in DRC's elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The 2019 VOA calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture U.S. byways, including beautiful photos of the Big Sur Coast Highway and even the historic Route 66. Tune in to Border Crossings at 1500 Universal to request a free calendar.